Call be dispensed with and Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Kevin McDonough, our state Senate chaplain, and then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mr. President, Senators, I usually don't ask you to have to participate much in the prayer, but I'd ask that you would join me at the end of winter and the beginning of spring in a brief prayer of gratitude for those who take care of us in various ways. Would you mind saying, you'll get the prompt, I am grateful. For those who guide snowplows, we say, I am grateful. For the State Highway Patrol and other public safety personnel, we say, for those who shelter the homeless, we say. For hockey moms and dads, coaches and officials, ski hill operators, all who make winter enjoyable, we say. For school bus drivers, we say. For those who shovel the sidewalks and keep the heat working in this capital, we say. Gracious, good God, we thank you for all who make winter not only tolerable but enjoyable. Bless the spring ahead. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Nice message. Thank you. Thank you. I didn't agree with all of those.
Secretary, we'll take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Foley, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olson G., Olson M., Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vanderveer, Vickerman, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. First order of business is executive and official communications. Are on today's agenda. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House files herewith transmitted. House file numbers 85, 789, 801, 602, and 668, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Now the next order of business is first reading of House bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of House bills. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business, second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading of Senate bills. The next order of business is motions and resolutions. There are a number of authors' motions. Without objection, we'll take them as one motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's a few motions to be made from the floor. Senator Olsen, Dahl, Marty, Wieger, Tomasoni, and Cohn. First one will be Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two motions. One is for general orders. Would that be this one? Thank you. And that would be on Senate File 234, that it be sent back to state and local government. And this is a bill that has to do with transfer of development credits.
On the old scene motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Dahl, do you have a motion?
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 358, which is number 29 on general orders, be stricken and re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration. This is my bill, and they are well aware it's coming.
On the Dahl motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Marty. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 1135, number 48 on general orders, be stricken and referred to the Committee on Rules and Administration.
On the Marty motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Wieger.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 1253 be withdrawn from the Committee on Education and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight. Mr. President, this is the Department of Education Policy Omnibus Bill. There are provisions that require review by the State and Local Government Committee as it relates to committees, advisory councils. The respective chairs of each committee are aware of it and agree with the referral.
No Uyghur motion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate File 1315 be withdrawn from the Committee on Taxes and be re-referred to the Committee on Higher Education. I've spoken with both chairs of the committees, and this is a bill regarding a refundable credit for payment of principal interest on student loans.
On the Tomassoni motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Cohn, do you have a motion to be read?
Yeah, Mr. President, I'd move that Senate File 1481 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
On the Senator Cohn's motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's one resolution on today's... Excuse me. Senator Olsen, did you have another motion?
Yes, Mr. President, and that's for Senate File 1671. I would request that it be withdrawn from the Committee on Energy Utilities and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. This is a bill that has to do with personal property tax exemption for a business looking to move into my area. Thank you.
On the Olsen motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's one resolution printed on today's agenda. Without objection, the resolution will be referred to the Rules Committee. What's remaining under motions without objection, take up Senate bill introductions. There's one change on page 7. Senate File 1786 will be sent to the Judiciary Committee. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills. And get right into the calendar. Remaining on motions, we'll take up the consent calendar. There are three bills printed on the agenda on the consent calendar. Murphy's not here. The second bill on the consent calendar will take up first be Senate File 8896, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate File 896 would allow municipalities that have municipal power agencies to work with similar communities with municipal power agencies to create additional entities. City of North St. Paul, which asked for this special legislation, also has identified several other communities that would benefit. The measure was heard in committee. There was no opposition.
Any further discussion on Senate File 896? Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 896, a bill for an act relating to energy, authorizing two or more existing municipal power agencies to form a new municipal power agency, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Be it 61 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed. Its title agreed to. We'll go to the third bill on the consent calendar, Senate File 1477. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. President, members, in Minnesota, in our building code, we have a very strict requirement for sprinkler systems when a building gets above a certain size and would accommodate a certain number of individuals. That usually works, but not always. The bill that you have before you, Senate File 1477, would allow a very narrow exception to that rule, and it would be for a picnic shelter at a historic site called Gilfillan Farm that's owned by the Redwood County Historical Society. They want to expand their picnic shelter. When they're going to do that, it would go above the required size for having it sprinkled. That is not a reasonable standard because this is a seasonal use. It's used only during the warm weather. This would grant an exception to our sprinkler code so they could expand their picnic shelter without putting in a sprinkler system.
Further discussion? Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1477, a bill for an act relating to construction codes providing a limited exemption.
Secretary will take the roll. Thanks. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Senator Olson votes aye. There being 62 ayes, 0 nay. Senator Jen Olson votes aye. It's 62 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed. It's title agreed to. We'll revert to the number one on the consent calendar. Will be Senator Murphy's bill, Senate File 1142. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, Senate File 1142 is simply a bill that declares June 13, 2003, Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day. This is a day that's set aside to honor those Vietnam veterans and the sacrifices that they've made on behalf of our country. Members, there's also going to be a large celebration that day, and I would ask that we get everyone to vote yes on this bill. Thank you.
Further discussion? Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 1142, a bill for an act relating to veterans, declaring June 13, 2009, Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Being 63 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed. It's title agreed. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, remaining on motions, I move the Senate take up the order of business of general orders.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, members, on your desk are designations for general orders, number 4, number 10, number 6, number 18, number 11, number 19, number 16, and number 63. I would yield to Senator Fredrickson.
Senator Fredrickson. Senate file 275.
Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate file number 275 be recommended to pass.
Discussion on the motion. Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. President, members, Senate file 275 deals with the Minnesota River Board. It was a board that was established in 1996 to help coordinate the cleanup of the Minnesota River. Just as kind of a reminder, the Minnesota River drains some 14,840 square miles in Minnesota. All are parts of 37 counties. It's 18.5% of the land base of Minnesota, the land mass of Minnesota, and is 29% of the cultivated acres in Minnesota. When the Minnesota River joins the Mississippi River, the flow in the Mississippi River is increased by about 50%. When we begin to focus on, once again, cleaning up the Minnesota River, in the early 1990s, when Governor Carlson said we should make it swimmable and fishable, the counties in the basin formed a joint powers board called the Minnesota River Joint Powers Board and have been working to help with the cleanup of the Minnesota River since. This bill makes some changes to that board, some updating of the board. First of all, it changes the name of the board from the Minnesota River Joint Powers Board to just the Minnesota River Board. It makes more deliberate and more formal that the Water Resource Center at the Minnesota State University, Mankato, is an integral part of that as a collaborative and executive director. The board collects and compiles information on the health of the river, reports that to the governor and the legislature. They report biennially on the status of the river. They also do a lot of collaborating, advising, educating and sharing of information. The membership on the board remains the elected county commissioners, one from each county that elects to join the Minnesota River Board. They elect a chair, and they also, this bill will also reorganizing the advisory committee that's now termed as a technical committee. Section 2 of the bill requires that the board chair designate somebody to facilitate the first meeting of the advisory committee. And Mr. Chairman, I do have one amendment I'd like to offer. It's the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the Fredrickson A50 amendment.
Senator Fredrickson moves to amend Senate files 275 as follows, page 3, line 25. This is amendment A50.
Senator Fredrickson on the amendment.
Mr. President, members, this moves a requirement that the Minnesota River Board provide staff for the advisory committee from Section 1 to Section 2 of the bill so it would apply only to their first meeting of the advisory committee.
On the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill.
Mr. President, I've explained the bill. Okay. I'd stand for questions.
Questions on the bill as amended. Seeing none, Senator Fredrickson renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 275 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders, Senator Lynch, are you ready with Senate File 983, Senator Lynch?
Mr. Chair, I move that when this community do arise, Senate File 983 be recommended to pass.
Senator Lynch, discussion on your bill.
In 2006, legislation was passed that designated the Great River Ridge Trail. This is a trail that stems from in the communities of Plainville, Elgin, Viola, and on to Chester Woods. And then following that, in 2008, in the bonding bill, the legislature appropriated $1.5 million to the Great River Ridge Trail to pave the trail. And design work has begun on the trail, and everything was progressing along nicely until February. And in February, it was discovered that due to some paperwork that was not properly processed, that official trail designation never actually took place. So what you see before you today, members, is legislation that will, in essence, offer a designation to the Great River Ridge Trail. And it's critical that we get this passed so that work can resume on the engineering and ultimately the design and pavement of this trail.
Any further discussion on Senate File 983? Seeing none, Senator Lynch renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 983 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next bill on the general orders be number 7, which is Senate File number 30. This is Senator Higgins. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 30 be recommended to pass.
Senator Higgins, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chair, I serve as one of the legislative members of the Minnesota Gang and Drug Oversight Council. This year, we heard from law enforcement that despite the measures that we took in 2005, they were still seeing meth labs pop up, especially in greater Minnesota. Law enforcement attributes these labs to what is called smurfing, which is where people go from drugstore to drugstore to drugstore to get the drugs that we call precursor drugs, cold capsules and that kind of thing. The legislation in 2005 required that logs be kept and be available to law enforcement. And we find that having those logs curbed much of this behavior. But the officers, especially in greater Minnesota, are finding that smaller pharmacies are unclear of our intent on sharing the logs with law enforcement. This bill would clarify that the logs should be kept, that they should be open to law enforcement at all reasonable times, and that they be kept for 3 years. So I guess this is a bill that says we really, really meant it. I'd like your support.
Is there further discussion on Senate File number 30? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Higgins, I had a question for you regarding Senate File 30. Right now, law enforcement, I understand, due to previous legislation, we can examine the history of purchase of certain drugs that are ingredients to methamphetamine. Could you tell me what the limitations are for that examination by law enforcement?
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, law enforcement is allowed to get these without a court order sort of thing. I thought you would be interested to know, Senator Limmer, that 151.213 governs copies of prescription drugs and who can have access to prescriptions. And even in existing statute, it says that a member, inspector, or investigator of the board or any federal, state, county, or municipal officer whose duty it is to enforce the laws of the state or the United States relating to drugs and who is engaged in a specific investigation involving a designated person or drug is entitled to copies of prescriptions. The drugs that we're talking about here are not prescription drugs. They are cold capsules and that kind of thing.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Higgins, be that as it may, Perhaps our existing law may have averted the focus on whether or not we should have proper search and seizure proceedings whenever we search for evidence by law enforcement on the citizens of Minnesota. Because of that, and since we only have your bill in front of us and not the existing law, I would like to introduce the Amendment A2.
Secretary will report the Limmer A2 amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 30 as follows. Page 2, line 24. This is Amendment A-2.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we don't have pages here in front of us to pass out the copies. Oh, maybe we do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A2 amendment is before you. It's rather straightforward. Any law enforcement officer, instead of simply requiring reasonable times to inspect an establishment's records, that they would have to provide, just like criminal procedure is in this state, probable cause to believe that there's been a violation of the law. You may remember that probable cause means that there's a reasonable idea that a crime was committed and that that one individual is committing the crime. We have found that to be a reasonable standard to protect civil liberty standards in the state of Minnesota, and at the same time, give law enforcement as much latitude as they can when they, in the position of the state, come in and invade territory that belongs to the individual based on criminal proceeding. That's exactly what my amendment does. It recognizes the continued criminal justice codes of investigation and search and seizure. Mr. Chair, the amendment is before us. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions.
Discussion on the Limmer A2 amendment, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I don't think that this is necessary. This is information that law enforcement uses to actually establish the cause, whether there is probable cause. The logs give them information that they can then use to establish it to go forward. So I oppose this amendment.
Discussion on the A2 amendment, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, I think I heard you right. If your bill passes, it would give law enforcement the opportunity to gain evidence so that they could enact a probable cause search further on, or perhaps just charge someone with a crime. That isn't quite the way we do things in Minnesota. It certainly isn't the way we do things in criminal proceeding. You need to have a probable cause to effect a proper search warrant. And what I'm trying to do is make sure that we don't have some of these searches to be thrown out of court based on not following proper criminal procedure. This appears to me, your bill appears to me, to be giving law enforcement an opportunity to have an open fishing expedition on all prescription records in, let's say, a pharmacy, looking for a specific element that makes methamphetamine without probable cause. That means you can go through all 10,000 lists and see the ones that are maybe buying more than 3 a week or whatever the ratio would be. And then they might have a suspicion, maybe that guy's a methamphetamine producer. But I think in order to protect civil liberties in this state, one has to have probable cause and then effect the search. That's the way most law enforcement investigators work. You know, we used to have a law that we could have kind of a dragnet where we'd stop everybody on a freeway in order to determine which ones are DWI. We know someone's DWI on the road, so we'll just pull them all over and then we'll find them. Well, the court found that to be unconstitutional, and I'm fearful that we may be going down the same road without probable cause. It's one of those elements that are necessary in order to run our criminal justice system.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman and members, just to refresh your memory, this is a bipartisan bill that Senator Rosen and I worked very hard on. And the whole purpose of creating the logs in the pharmacy was to detect whether people were pharmacy shopping for these precursor drugs. And so it's only reasonable then that law enforcement would have access to these logs. We know that the keeping of these logs and the limitation of these kind of drugs to a minimum amount per month has reduced the number of methamphetamine cooking places, houses, whatever, in Minnesota. The law is working well, and this would be a huge detriment to enforcing the law by law enforcement. And so the only reason one could support this amendment is if they want people to be able to bypass the law by shopping at various pharmacies to collect enough to be able to cook methamphetamine. So I would urge a no vote on this amendment.
Senator Ortman, Rosen, and Olson.
Thank you, Mr. President. And to your amendment, Senator Limmer, I am equally concerned about data privacy issues as you are, and I'm sure that that's why this was generated, was out of data privacy concern. And so I thank you for raising the issue. It's important to talk about. But I believe that what Senator Higgins' bill does is it just requires the retention of information that law enforcement currently has access to. And retaining those logs is important. Law enforcement has been very successful in monitoring the purchase of Sudafed across the state. It was not a provision in the meth bill that I was particularly fond of when we voted for it, but I did vote for it, and it has turned out to be a very effective tool. Because if someone is looking for one of those precursors, one of the elements to manufacturing meth, they're going to acquire Sudafed or that element in multiple pharmacies. So they may go from Cologne pharmacy to the pharmacy in Wilmer and move on to another one and buy some. And so this is a way that law enforcement can monitor the purchase of that very key element for the manufacturer of methamphetamine. That's in the law now. They have access to that. And what Senator Higgins is saying is please make sure that those logs are maintained for 3 years, that they aren't destroyed later, so that law enforcement has an opportunity later to fully inspect them. So I support Senator Higgins' bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, rise to support Senator Higgins' bill without the Senator Limmer's amendment. I think it's very important to keep these records because, as Senator Ortman mentioned, this is a tool that is very critical to law enforcement. We have been very successful in this state with the methamphetamine issue, and we should all sit back and pat each other on the back because we did make a statement on that drug. However, I'm going to serve notice today, members of this chamber, and I live 8 miles from the Iowa border, and that's basically where methamphetamine came up from. The human services departments in my counties had zero out-of-home placements for the last year. Last week, they came to tell me, zero out-of-home placements concerning methamphetamine for a whole year, about a year and a half. And last week they came to tell me they had 16 methamphetamine out-of-home placements with children in 1 month. Now something is happening out there, members. And I also know that they are starting to cook again in Iowa. Now where are they getting the pseudoephedrine, the ephedrine? Who knows? But it is out there, and they are starting to cook. And so that's why I think it's very important to give this tool, to extend this tool to the law enforcement, to allow them to go back and look at the records. It is not an issue of civil liberties. I'm sorry, Senator Limmer. It is just a signature, and that's all that's required.
Senator Olson, and we're getting close to a vote, I think. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to thank Senator Limmer. Senator Limmer and I serve on the Data Practices Subcommittee together. And as the non-lawyer member on that committee, Senator Limmer often brings to our attention things that a private citizen might be concerned about that sometimes don't always come to our attention. So I really appreciate his looking out for privacy concerns, and he does that quite well. But I would have to say that the case that Senator Limmer was referencing has to do with stopping someone and then interfering with their freedom of movement and their ability to move forward. So the law that we have that has to do with probable cause in those kinds of situations, I don't believe would be applicable to this type of situation where you have information that really belongs to these businesses that has to be kept private, that we have the data practices laws that protect the privacy, and we also have data practices laws that apply to law enforcement and how they would handle this information. So I don't think that there really is, from a legal perspective, an analogy there that would prohibit what Senator Higgins is proposing. Thank you.
Further discussion on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion does not prevail. Any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since that amendment didn't work, I have another amendment, the A1 amendment.
Secretary will report the A1 Limmer amendment.
Senator Limmer moves to amend Senate File 30 as follows, page 2, line 24. This is Amendment A-1.
Senator Limmer on the A-1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins and members, in order to put a little more parameter on the effort of law enforcement, I made the A-1 amendment as a little more general, and it specifically requires that instead of having any opportunity to investigate, that at least it would be for, and written into law that it would be at least for the purposes of investigating violations in this subdivision. That way they can't search for any old reason. It has to be at least for the purposes of investigating the very violations that you're trying to recognize, Senator Higgins. It does not include the probable cause provision that I had in the last one.
Discussion on the A-1 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I don't think it's necessary. If you look at the rest of the existing law, it tells specifically what these logs are used for. It tells the kind of purchases that they are used for, over-the-counter sales, and a definition of that. It is not used for valid prescription drugs. It lays out in great detail what is needed. It's working in most places very well. I just don't think that this amendment is necessary, and I would ask you to
further
also vote no.
Further discussion on the A-1 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Did you ask for a roll call? Three hands. Secretary will take the roll on the Limmer, Senator Limmer's A1 amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 22 ayes, 42 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, Senator Higgins renews her motion that when this committee do arise, Senate file number 30 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders, number 19, Senate file number 832, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when this committee do arise, Senate file 832 be recommended to pass.
Senator Bach, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chairman, Minnesota has a significant printing industry. We have over 30,000 employees that work for Minnesota printing companies. We do a lot of printing for companies that corporations that are not located in Minnesota. Part of the reason for that is the paper mills that exist in Minnesota give us a transportation advantage. Paper is a very, very heavy commodity, so there's significant shipping costs. So what happens is oftentimes a corporation that's not domiciled in Minnesota will have the paper from the paper mill delivered directly to the printer. The printer actually never will take ownership of it, simply put the ink on the sheet of paper and then it's shipped out to the out-of-state corporation. What this bill makes very clear is that the fact that an out-of-state company that owns the paper in Minnesota sitting at the printers, that does not mean that they're subject to Minnesota corporate income taxes. Normally, Minnesota corporate income taxes are assessed on a formula of which one of the components is the amount of property that a corporation owns in Minnesota. And this makes it clear that the ownership of tangible property in the form of paper does not make you subject to Minnesota corporate income taxes. Members, I'd appreciate your support.
Further discussion on Senate File 832. Senator Day.
Very quick, Mr. Chairman. For Minnesota printing industry, this is a really good bill.
Further discussion, the Secretary will give the bill. Excuse me. Senator Bach renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 832 be recommended to pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill is number 12, Senate File number 34, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 34 be recommended to pass.
Senator Vickerman, discussion on the bill.
Senate File 34 would allow the DNR Trails Division to work on planning for an extension of the existing Casey Jones Trail and on plans for a new Des Moines River Trail. This bill would enable us to establish an integrated southwestern trail system between four beautiful Minnesota state parks, Split Rock Creek Park, Blue Mound, Lake Chautauqua, and Kylan Woods. The Jackson, Murray, Rock, and County Boards have all passed resolutions supporting the trail planning, and the DNR Trail Division support the bill. I would ask for your support on Senate File number 34.
Discussion on Senate File number 34, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the Senator yield for a question?
He will yield, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. President, members, Senator Vickerman, there's no fiscal note to this. How is this going to be paid for? Has there been talk about that at all? Or maybe I'm missing something here.
Senator Vickerman, did you get the question?
Mr. President, Senator Vickerman. There is no cost right now because we're still in the planning process, which will take some time to do it. So there is no cost to the bill. Not at this present time. When the plans come up later on, well, then it probably would have to put some money in.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. That's all I had. Thanks.
Further discussion on Senate File number 34. Seeing none, Senator Vickerman renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File number 34 be recommended to pass. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The next bill on general orders is number 19 on general orders, Senate File number 1028, Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1028 be recommended to pass.
Senator Dahl, discussion on your bill.
Mr. Chair, this bill would quite simply allow the city of New Prague to keep their main street open from, which is a major state highway, Highway 19, keep it open from Friday evening at 6 p.m. till, I believe, 6 a.m. Sunday morning. They've been doing this for 24 years without any problem. They have the proper signage and the proper recommendations from MnDOT in terms of the detour. However, just recently, MnDOT was following a little used portion of the traffic engineering manual that says that a major state highway could not stay open beyond 4 hours. So they do have the leeway in the language of that engineering manual to go beyond the 4 hours, but they chose not to. After talking with MnDOT and sending a letter to them and sitting down and talking with them, they still were holding fast to that, so we decided to legislate this particular closure. We've had no accidents in 24 years. Safety is not a concern, according to the police chief there, and we would appreciate your support for this bill.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Dahl renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1028 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The next bill on the general orders calendar, number 16, be Senate File number 208. Be Senator Vanderveer's bill, which is number 1028. Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 208 be recommended to pass.
Senator Vanderveer, discussion on the bill.
Senate File 208 simply broadens the from the metropolitan area to statewide the authority of the Commissioner of Transportation to allow the use of transit buses and metro mobility buses on designated freeway expressway shoulders. So we're just expanding the current use to statewide for vehicles that meet the requirements of the law.
Further discussion on Senate File number 208. Seeing none, Senator Vanderveer renews his motion when this committee do arise, Senate File 208 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The last bill on general orders, number 63 on general orders, Senate File number 99, Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, when this committee do arise, I move that Senate File 99 be recommended to pass.
Okay. Senator Carlson, discussion on your bill.
Mr. President and members, this is a bill that we have seen before come before the body, and in the past it's been overwhelmingly approved. What it is it's the Child Safety Restraint Bill, and what it does is it provides information for parents of children, parents and other people who haul children in their vehicles between the ages of 4 and 8 years old, where the seats that they have been using in the past or the seat belts that they use in the past are not appropriate for their body. What we see is that children between these ages don't have the body strength in the particular areas that the seat belt impinges on their waists to be able to handle an impact. And what we found is that children who have had these kinds of injuries are 28% more likely to have a fatal fatality, and also 56% more likely to have a hospitalization and have a serious injury. And what this does is it continues the information that is in your owner's manual in your vehicle. If you look in your vehicle's owner's manual for the last many years, it will say check local laws. And in Minnesota, we do not have a local law that provides parents the guidance that they need for selecting a child restraint. These child restraints that fit these categories all have tags on them. They all say how large of the child that they will protect. And what they do is they prevent the child from having a seat belt, a shoulder strap across their face, which they will then put behind themselves and then be only protected by the lap belt, which is not a good protection of a child's body that age. So what it does is it provides that for children ages 4 through 8 that they need to be restrained in an appropriate restraint. And that appropriate restraint might be a booster seat, it might be a backless booster seat, and in fact it could even be the seat belt that's in the automobile if the child is large enough. And the NTSB has done studies about this, and they have found that children that are 4 feet 9 inches and larger are appropriate to be restrained in this manner. So, all Mr. right. Chair, as I mentioned, this is a very serious child safety bill. It does not provide any more oversight in the fact of a primary seatbelt law, because it is already primary. What this does is it just defines the type of seat that a child should be restrained in. So thank you very much, and I hope that the members will support this bill.
Further discussion on Senate File number 99? Seeing none, Senator Carlson renews his motion that when this committee do arise, Senate File 99
be recommended
to Tomasoni. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, this bill doesn't need to be passed, members. We have primary laws for all. This is a primary seatbelt law, and somebody with an 8-year-old in the car can be picked up now. And better yet, they'll have to be carrying around a birth certificate for their kid to make sure they can prove the age. They'll have to have a tape measure in their car so that they can measure the kid to make sure they're below 8 feet or 4 feet, 4 feet, 4 feet 9 inches. The police officers can be stopping people anytime they want to when they see somebody small in the car. I don't know if Senator Bonhoeff would get picked up under this bill or not. And I apologize, Senator Bonhoeff, but she told me her height was the one thing that bothered her. But members, we don't need this bill. I realize that kids' safety has to be very important and foremost in people's minds, and parents do that. But if you have four kids going to the hockey game in the van, if you don't have enough booster seats, are you violating the law? Can you be stopped? Can you be fined? The fines in the bill are unnecessary. There's a $50 fine in here if you do this. Members, we have about 495 pages of statute for police to stop you and pick you up on a road, and this one is not necessary. Parents should be responsible enough to be able to make decisions like this, and the booster seat law is in effect, and if a parent got the booster seat at the age of 4, they should still have it at the age of 8 if the child is still short. So let's vote against this.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Tomasoni, this really isn't a primary seat belt or restraint addition, because what it is, it's already a requirement that a child of this age is restrained in the car, and you can be stopped for it. And as far as not having enough seats, this question was asked last time we had this in front of the body, and I didn't have a real good answer. But members, in your handout, there is an answer there, and the answer is that these accidents are very devastating to young children. And if you don't have, you possess the information right now. That information is in your hands. And no one in this body should have their young children, young grandchildren, not restrained properly, because the information is in your hands. And what this bill does is it puts the information in the hands of other parents. It's very permissive in that if you are stopped, if you are charged, there is the $50 fine, but it may be waived if within 14 days you provide evidence that you have secured one of these restraints, which they're very easy, they're very low cost, and in fact, one of the things that, and there's still a lot of stages that this needs to go through, but the bill that we have in front of us, if it is signed in this way, because there are some requirements in there, the 4 through 8 years old, the 4 feet 9, and a few of those kinds of things that are recommended by the NTSB, that we potentially in Minnesota will get $260,000 over the next 2 years to help provide this education, to also help provide people booster seats. Now, booster seats and child restraints, they're a very typical hand-me-down. And in fact, police chiefs, and we had one police officer tell me that they are getting donations to provide to people who have been stopped not having one of these seats in their possession. So there are seats available. They're sold in garage sales. This is more of an education than it is a punitive bill or law. So, members, I hope you support it.
Senator Murphy.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, Senator Tomasoni says that members or families already do this, and this law is in search of an issue that is non-existent. But members, it is. According to the latest Department of Public Safety data, only 15% of Minnesota families currently are using the appropriate device for children between the ages of 8 and 4. 15%, members, that's it. We need to get that compliance rate up substantially. And I think it's pretty clear, the other statistics that are pretty clear is the reason why, is because kids that are at this age, when they're involved in a serious crash and they're not in the proper device, the medical expenses are so much higher, and the risk of death is much higher too. It's approximately 25% higher, 28% higher, actually, if they are in an improper device. So, members, not only is this bill needed, but it's also going to save families the heartache of taking their young kids to the hospital and incurring thousands and thousands of dollars of hospital bills. And members, once again, some of these families, we all get to pay the societal costs for the damage that's done for these crashes. So members, we've passed this bill in the past in the Senate, and I would hope that we do the same thing with a very strong vote here today. Thank you.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. When we first had this bill, I made the Sam Ortman argument. He was 8 at the time. And I want to remind members that when a child is 8, that child is in second or third grade. They've lost all their baby teeth, their grown-up teeth are in. They're playing machine pitch baseball, basketball. They're, of course, riding bikes. Sometimes they get rides from their grandparents. Sometimes they carpool from the baseball game. Sometimes they carpool back from school from events. Members, we cannot protect all these children against every conceivable risk. And I think that's what we have to do here is put some balance on this. We cannot legislate results. That's what this bill is an attempt to do. It is an attempt to say that no child will ever be harmed in an automobile accident in Minnesota. Well, who wouldn't agree with that goal? I agree with that goal. I don't want to see children that are injured in automobile accidents, but let's balance the goal against common sense. Imagine if you're a mom and you want to bring home the kids after the baseball game.
Say you've got four kids that are going to ride, and you've got to have four booster seats. Is the kid supposed to come with his own booster seat? I'm sorry, I need a ride home from the game. Your grandma can't come and pick you up from the game because mom can't get off work? What happens if the coach is going to bring somebody home because something happened? No booster seat. Let's educate parents. That's a great way to spend some MnDOT money. It's a great effort on the part of the legislature, on the part of MnDOT, on the part of our local governments, our police officers, our state patrol. But let's not legislate this, because we cannot legislate the result. And I guarantee you this, we can require every 8-year-old and under to have a booster seat, and we will still have children injured in automobiles. We cannot accomplish that goal with this legislation. I hope members will use their common sense and vote no.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm not going to come up with a question more than just a comment. I mean, if you note, last year I voted in favor of this legislation. However, I'm having some second thoughts when I hear different testimony here from Senator Tomasoni with regards to some of the donations. And I think even Senator, the author, is even talking about donations to law enforcement. And I know that happens all the time, where they have these seats available and they're doing the education. And I look for this to be maybe even a nightmare for law enforcement, having to pull out their rulers in the middle of the street at night and take the child out of the car. I fear repercussions of that as well. I'm not sure I'd want to be that officer to require that kid to come out and stand on the street and measure him. And I know that might be the extreme, Senator Carlson, but I'm afraid that could be very potentially damaging. Certainly it's not going to break their neck or their back or their leg, but you know what I'm talking about. It's going to give them a different light of law enforcement. So I've changed my attitude towards this, and what Senator Ortman talked about with responsibility, I have to agree with her. All those particular types of situations she talked about go on every day. And are those people going to be required to have those seats in their cars when they're going to give somebody a break by giving them a ride home? So I think it's almost impossible to legislate this, and I guess I would certainly, I'm changing my support here to actually vote against it, so I'd encourage folks to do so. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File Number 99, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. President. This legislation is all about saving children's lives and making them be safe. We all know that seatbelts aren't designed for children. I mean, they're not even designed for women, quite frankly. They're not well designed at all unless you have the clip where you can lower the seatbelt so it doesn't choke your neck. So I think it's very dangerous right now the way it is. I was the author of the original child car seat legislation that included the provision that if you provided proof that you'd purchased a car seat for your child, the fine would be waived. This is the goal, members, is to have parents actually transport their children safely. Now, the whole argument about what if someone else is transporting grandma or, in my case, auntie, because I have 2 8-year-old nieces, well, you know, we either transfer the booster seat or we purchase booster seats if we transport those children all the time. And they're not that expensive. The whole goal is to be transporting children safely, and I urge everyone to vote for this bill.
Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Carlson, yield for a question.
He will yield, Senator Vandiver.
Senator Carlson, is this a primary offense? Can a driver be pulled over for this?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, yes, it does not change it. This was a primary offense in the past, and it remains so. That part of the law was not changed.
Senator Vandiver.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, what would ever be the reason to pull them over?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, can you repeat the question?
How would a police officer know to pull somebody over for this offense?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, I'm assuming just like any other observed offense, It would be the child maybe moving around in the seat. You could probably see where whether or not the child is properly restrained from the outside. I don't think that it would be easy to see it. However, this is something where you would be able to also tag the driver if there was another infraction that took place.
Senator Vandiver.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, how would they know that the child was less than 4'9" tall? That was, you know, that they were pulling over for not having restraints.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, actually not being belted in is not limited to 4'9" because there's an age limit that goes beyond the 8 years. And it's actually, I believe it's 11 years. And then there's another part of statute that goes up to age 16.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, we're really simplifying it now, aren't we? It does seem to me that the intent is good, but that this is extremely confusing and might give parents a false sense of security that if they just have a seat, that their kids are actually going to be better off, when in certain cases they're going to have to understand the 4'9" rule and a lot of other things. I wonder if we're just not adding more confusion to this, which is really a parent's responsibility in the first place. And I think I'm inclined to not go down this road again, and I think Senator Tomasoni's right. This is a primary seatbelt law now. That will be the end effect of it. But thank you.
Senator Carlson.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, like I mentioned, it does not change the need, the primary seatbelt requirement or primary restraint requirement for a young child. It's primary already from age newborn to age 4 as a booster seat. This specifically identifies it as a child restraint, an age, weight, height appropriate restraint. And these definitions come from the NTSB, and they've come from studies on how tall a child might be to be able to be properly restrained with a chest belt. This is the problem where you need to pick a size, and 4'9" is what the NTSB has picked as that size. Now, when you talk about how to actually measure the child, I don't know that you'll ever get down to a micrometer type of measurement that you're going to find a child who is 4'8.5" or 4'9.5" and is or is not within this requirement. But the parent knows, and like we've heard here, common sense is that a child needs to be restrained in the proper restraint for their size, for their weight, for their age, for their behaviors in the car. And this is something where it's more of a educational, it's not a service, but it's an educational initiative that what we would like to do is make sure that in law, there is law that the owner's manual that you have in your car can be applied to restraining a young child. If you look in your owner's manual, it says, check your local laws for children in this range. And at this point, we have no local law. 44 other states do. We are one of the last. And this is one of the things that the NTSB has also put in some money to encourage states to pass these bills and to educate parents in something that we would normally say is common sense.
Okay, Senator Vandiver, and we're getting close to a vote. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, I kind of understand what you're saying, but I'm having a little difficulty following all the rules that a parent's supposed to figure out. But I do know this. We can't afford to put everyone in jail, so let's not vote for this.
Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Vandiver, I'm not sure you got a complete answer to your question, and I thought that it was an extremely insightful question. It's a question that I asked in Transportation Committee when we talked about the primary seatbelt bill. I said, what is the standard by which an officer might pull someone over for a violation of this rule, for this or for the primary seatbelt rule? And this is where Senator Tom Soni's comment is very accurate. This is a primary seatbelt bill. And what it does is authorizes law enforcement to pull someone over based on a reasonable suspicion that they're not in the proper booster seat or they're not wearing a seatbelt. So it would be a suspicion. There's no requirement that the officer actually see the child, not even see that there's a child loose in the car or unbelted. It's a suspicion. And so essentially it's a guess or a speculation, and we'll have officers pulling people over for essentially no reason at all. Mr. President, I had hoped to provide that clarification. It was testimony that was provided in the Transportation Committee from our State Patrol that it would be a reasonable suspicion standard. But then I heard Senator Carlson say one other thing. He talked about having booster seats as a method of controlling behavior in the car. And I'm really very surprised that he would consider such a thing, that that's some added benefit. What he's really doing is admitting that he's trying to legislate behavior in the car. And I'd hope that we would all agree that that's beyond the scope of proper legislation. Let's have a goal, perhaps, to reduce automobile accidents and reduce injuries to children. But we don't need to legislate results, and we certainly should not be trying to legislate behavior.
Senator Corrine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I want to speak my piece on this. I'm opposed to this bill. I will tell you, members, that I have had, over the last month, I had a town hall meeting in Nisswa, in Baxter, in Brainerd, in Crosby, in Little Falls, and the people are overwhelmingly telling me, enough with the laws. Enough with the laws. You ever look at all the books that we have? Don't you think we have enough laws? And I've noticed that in committee, there isn't a whole lot of bills that are coming forward that cost money because we don't have any money. So everybody thinks, well, I've got to have, let's change some more, make some more laws. We almost act like people have no common sense. Believe me, where I come from, people have a lot of common sense. So let's just slow down with the laws. Enough with the laws. And also, my people that I represent are telling me, enough with the taxes. So I just hope we send a message to say, enough with the laws, and say no to this. This is bordering on the ridiculous.
Senator Van Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Carlson, in reviewing your law, or your bill, I wanted to ask a question. If, let's say, a grandparent was driving a grandchild, and if your bill had passed and there was an accident and there was any harm to the grandchild, I just want to know, what would be the liability of the grandparent? Could the grandparent be sued by the grandchild because they didn't follow your prescribed effort to place that child in the proper restraint? I'm just wondering, because I know that question will eventually come up. Some grandparent, or like Senator Ortman said, a coach from a little league practice is driving a kid home and they get in an unfortunate accident. Would the coach be subject to a lawsuit because they didn't adequately protect the child according to your bill? And I think that's very important to consider, because the examples that Senator Ortman brought up are real-life examples. And I want to make absolutely sure how I vote on this.
Senator Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, of course they would be. A driver is always susceptible to being sued from a passenger. I believe that we have the right to redress here, and that would be one of the things that would probably happen. No matter if they were in a restraint, whether they were in a seatbelt, whether they were any age whatsoever, you can always sue the driver. So, yes, I think that the answer is obviously yes, but it has nothing to do with this law. And when you talk about the grandparents, there's something that we need to really talk about seriously. I sat next to the grandmother of the little girl who testified in our committee. Her name is Bryn. And she is, you know, I hate to use the term poster child, but she is the example of the poster child for this bill. She was 7, and she put the shoulder strap behind her when riding with her grandmother because her grandmother didn't have the seat that Bryn had as her seat because she picked her up at school. She knew that there's probably some risk. She had also talked with her daughter about the risk, and the daughter or the mother of Bryn said that there isn't anything in law that requires this some type of seat. She did ride with her grandmother in Fergus Falls, was involved in an injury, in an accident, which caused her to have a severed spinal column. She is now in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. She is 9 years old now. Now, is there something that could rise to a lawsuit? Of course there is, but it doesn't even compare with the feeling that this grandmother has for injuring her young grandchild.
All right, I think we're ready for the vote. We had a lot of discussion. Senator Ortman, briefly, and then I think people know how they're going to vote. I believe that.
Thank you, Mr. President. And to your question, Senator Lermer, absolutely there will be more lawsuits based on a failure to use these booster seats. Right now, if an adult allows a child in the back seat of the car...
All right.
Under current law, if an adult has a child in the back seat of the car that is not strapped in, that would be evidence in a lawsuit of negligence. If we increase that standard to a booster seat, now that would be the negligence standard, and that would apply to a parent like me if I have a sleepover and one of Sam's friends comes and we decide to go out to dinner. If that friend isn't in a booster seat, I would be liable to that family for any injury that occurred. And so we are increasing the potential for litigation if we increase the standard here.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, then we are going to vote. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the author, I still have very, very hard, not heartache, but I have some problems with pulling somebody out of the car this age at 10:30, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, out on I-94, and having to measure the height of the individual. I just really have a hard time with it. So I would like to offer an oral amendment, if I could, Mr. President, that would address that. If I could, the amendment would be on line 19, would be to delete shorter than 4 feet, excuse me, eight, and shorter than, excuse me, and shorter than 4 feet, 9 inches. Take that out, as well as move down to line 1.16 and strike and shorter than 4 feet, 9 inches. And also, in order to make that conformed, I would also like to strike the word on line 1.15, both, as well as there's one other area here. 1.19, strike both. I would like to offer that up.
Well, we're going to announce the amendment, but normally they've got to be quite a bit shorter than what the senator came up with, but we're going to do it this time, but they should be in writing, and the secretary will report the Ingebrigtsen amendment.
Senator Ingebrigtsen is moving to amend Senate File 99 as follows. On page 1, line 9, delete both, and after 8, delete and shorter than 4 feet, and on line 10, 9 inches. And on line 15, delete both. And on line 16, and shorter than 4 feet, 9 inches.
Okay, we're on the amendment. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, I oppose the amendment.
On the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Any further discussion on the bill? Three hands for roll call. Senator Carlson renews his motion when this committee to arise. Senate File 99 be recommended to pass. Secretary will take the roll on the bill. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 41 ayes and 22 nays, the motion prevails. Senator Fogelmiller.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee do now rise and report.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole as kept by the secretary be now adopted.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I believe we're wrapped up for the today if there are announcements of Senate interest.
I believe that without objection, Senator Latz, Scheid, excuse all day, Senator Hand from 11 to 11:30, Senator Ortman from 11 to 11:25, Senator Pappas from 11 to 11:25. Announcement, Senator Betzel.
Mr. President,
Senator Betzel.
Mr. President, the State Government Budget Division will meet in 1/2 hour after the end of session. 1/2 hour after session for the State Government Budget Division.
Senator Marty.
Mr. President, the Health, Housing, Family Security meeting will meet in 25 minutes at 1 o'clock.
Senator Salzman.
The business, industry, and jobs will start in 1/2 hour at 1 o'clock sharp. We have a lot of bills. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, the Public Safety Budget Division will meet at 4 today.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, just a heads up, we are going to meet Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday this week, but Tuesday and Wednesday will be just to process committee reports. And so I would move that. And probably tomorrow we will have to come in at noon, process some committee reports, and perhaps recess and process some later in the day. But again, those will be just to process committee reports. There won't be votes. So, Mr. President, I'd move that the Senate adjourn until Tuesday, March 24th, 12 noon.
On the motion to adjourn to 12 noon tomorrow, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.